Good morning. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Hannah Colton, a public health reporter here at KUNM. Communities across New Mexico are trying a new approach to substance use disorder, having law enforcement work with service providers to get people support instead of sending them to jail. Santa Fe piloted the state's first program like this in 2014, and today we'll hear from folks doing similar work in Albuquerque, Española, and the Pueblo of Pahuaque. How do these programs make a difference for people trying to stop using? Do they do enough to treat addiction as a public health issue rather than a criminal one? We want to hear from you this morning. Give us a call, 277-5866. Our phone lines are open, ready to take your calls. You can also email letstalk@kunm.org or tweet at us using the hashtag letstalknm. I want to welcome in the studio this morning, Sam Howarth, who is Behavioral Health Administrator for Bernalillo County. Good morning.
Good morning, Hannah.
Thanks for being here. So you've helped get Bernalillo County's LEAD program up and running, and I guess I should say it stands for Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion. What does that mean?
Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion is a model whereby trained LEAD police officers can choose to make a diversion of an individual whose low-level criminal activity is related to their substance use challenge. So in Bernalillo County's model, there are a list of what we call inclusionary crimes, which are crimes that an individual might commit that a police officer could then say, if it's related to a substance use challenge, I'm going to divert this individual. And those crimes are low-level possession of a substance, prostitution, vagrancy, loitering, truancy, or commission of a low-level property crime that's commissioned because the individual wants to steal something that they can then sell or trade for whatever they're using. In that case, it's important to note that it has to be a, quote, victimless crime. So if somebody breaks into your car to steal your iPad and the police officer catches them, they have to knock on your door and say, are you okay with me making this diversion? And if you're not, then the individual would go to MDC, to jail.
And the idea is that prosecuting and jailing people for these kind of low-level crimes over and over is not effective in the first place at reducing drug crime or drug use. Is that right?
Correct. I mean, these are people that law enforcement know. They see them on their beat all the time. Their big challenge is a substance use disorder. And so they're committing these crimes to be able to address their habit. And so they cycle through the criminal justice system. Law enforcement picks them up. They go to jail, they go to court, they get released, it happens again. So this gives police officers, and this is really important, it's really another tool at their discretion to make a different decision rather than saying, I'm taking you to MDC or I'm going to leave you where you are and choose not to charge you. They can say, I'm going to connect you with a case manager who's going to help you get the social and medical supports and services that you need so that you're in a better position to be able to then think about addressing your addiction. So when a police officer makes a diversion, they're diverting the person in our model to the MATS campus on Zuni, where we have LEAD case managers who intake that individual.
And MATS is medication-assisted treatment.
Not in this case.
It's okay.
The Metropolitan Assessment and Treatment Services campus on
thank
Zuni.
You.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it is also medication-assisted treatment sometimes.
Is that offered there at
it
that
isn't.
Location?
Okay, it's
no.
not.
So it's more of just an intake and case management location.
Correct. We run a public inebriate program there, and we run a detox program, and we run a supported aftercare program, which is sober living. So that all happens on that campus, a lot of activity. But the advantage we have for our LEAD program is that law enforcement can bring somebody to that campus where they can be intake 24/7, even if a LEAD case manager is not there. So if they come in on a Sunday night, Monday morning, the LEAD case manager's there, they can spend the night and get a shower and a sandwich and be intaked in the morning.
Gotcha. I want to welcome another guest to the program. Kim McGinnis is on the line, chief tribal court judge for the Pueblo of Pahuaque. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning.
So you already oversee a type of court that you call the Path to Wellness Court, and then you're working on a new program called The Road. So what changes are in the works, and how does it differ from the LEAD program that we're hearing about in Bernalillo County?
So we've had the Path to Wellness here in the Pueblo Pauqui for a little bit over 4 years now, which is for court-involved people. So people get arrested usually for DUIs or domestic violence or other crimes and also have a substance use disorder. So these are similar to drug courts, but it's a tribal court model, healing to wellness courts. And that's been a successful model for folks who are at high risk for reoffending and also have high needs for substance use disorder treatment. But what we found is that, first of all, because we're a tribal community, the Pueblo does not have jurisdiction, criminal jurisdiction, over people who are not Native Americans. And the Pueblo Pauqui has a lot of people who are not Native Americans who have substance use disorders and commit low-level crimes here on the Pueblo. So we needed to find a way to help those people. And we also needed a way, because some people can't make it in the Path to Wellness because it's too structured, or they choose not to stop using substances, or they don't commit crimes, so they don't become court involved. So we needed to find a different model to help people who either weren't going to come through the court system, we didn't have jurisdiction for them to come through the court system, or their needs did not fit into the Path to Wellness model. So we created The Road, which is a diversion program, but it's also a program where people who don't necessarily have contact with law enforcement, but they may have contact in the community, or they may have contact with our social services, can be directed to them, not necessarily through law enforcement. So The Road stands for Recovery, Opportunity, Advocacy, and Diversion. And it's really focused on harm reduction in the Pauqui Valley community. We've seen a lot of deaths. We've seen a lot of alcohol and opioid-related deaths, and now we're seeing a lot of methamphetamine coming up and people using alcohol and meth, which is extremely dangerous, as well as using opioids and meth together is also extremely dangerous. And there's I just saw the article this morning in the Santa Fe New Mexican about the increase in overdose deaths, largely related to methamphetamine.
And Judge McGinnis, your program, like these other diversion programs, does not require participants to be sober. Is that right?
That's correct.
So is that important? Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Well, it's important because some people just are not, they're not there yet. They're not ready, or they don't want to for whatever reason. And so The Road is about being non-judgmental, and it's meeting people where they're at. So what need do you need now? Like the other participant today said, you know, if they need a shower, they need a, you know, sandwich. If that's the only engagement that they're willing to take right now, then that's where they're at, and that's where I'll help them out. So these folks, you know, I typically won't see them because it's a completely different building. It's not part of the court system. But they will typically, you know, come in, and we will figure out, do they need a food voucher? Do we need to help them get into a sober living? We do have some sober living opportunities here on the Pueblo that we can get them into. But we don't require them to be, you know, free from illegal drugs or not using illegal drugs. If we do put them into our sober living house, our rule is that they cannot use in the sober living environment because that endangers other people's sobriety. We try to be super low barrier. You know, we don't want to prevent people from getting help. If people are seeking engagement, we want to make sure that they're coming back.
And Judge McGinnis, I know you have to get going to your work today, but can you just talk a little bit about what is your philosophy as the head judge there when people come into your courtroom, and what's your ultimate goal as to what kinds of interactions people, especially with substance use disorder, who may or may not be, you know, trying to get sober, what's your goal as to what their interactions are like with your court?
Well, if they're coming into the court, our goal is to have an environment where they are able to come back, willing to come back, because if people keep coming back and keep being engaged, if we can improve their lives in some way and keep them safe and keep them from dying, the Pueblo Pauqui governor, Joseph Tlachi, says, you know, the main goal of our Pueblo is to not leave anybody behind. And that's, you know, our philosophy here is to get people engaged. We are doing a lot around reducing trauma in the courtroom setting. We have a courthouse facility dog now that people come and can engage with, and it really helps people come back because they're really excited to see the dog, because who doesn't want to see a dog? And then in our road program, which is a separate office suite away from the courthouse. People come in, we have snacks, we have, you know, they can hang out, they can get on the computer and look for jobs or just cruise the internet if that's what they want to do. So, we don't want to judge people. And that's the main thing, is creating this non-judgmental environment where we're trying to help people improve their lives and be safer. And it's really about getting people to keep coming back and creating an environment where they're not afraid to come back, where they're not going to feel like they're going to be punished if they relapse. But it's really, we're just going to try to figure out how to move forward with them.
All right. Thank you so much, Kim McGinnis, tribal court judge at the Pueblo of Powake. And I want to welcome also to the program Cindy Martinez on the line, licensed alcohol and drug addiction counselor with the Pueblo of Powake Tribal Court. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning.
And you are doing that work that Judge McGinnis was just talking about, of helping people get the services they need when they come in, either through the wellness court or through this new road program that's coming up. But you're also in recovery, so I wonder if you would just share a bit about your own recovery story and tell us about what it took for you to be able to quit using.
Okay, so I've been a substance abuse counselor for over... July 26th was my 16 year sober.
Congratulations.
Clean. Thank you. I began at 25. I didn't stop till I was 42. And we're talking about living a life of waking up in the morning and going to bed at night all day, 24/7, just worrying about where you're going to get your next fix. You can go through a lot in 17 years of addiction. And apparently that wasn't enough for me. I mean, you know, even years before that, it wasn't enough for me to get help. Or, you know, I had a judge who continued to send me to programs and send me to residential and send me to outpatient. And it didn't work for me. I kept breaking the law. I got kicked out. I wanted to use. It is such a powerful disease that... You know, I had three young children that grew up on me in the 17 years that I used, and I'll never get that back. And part of our use is also comes from guilt and shame and disgust with yourself because, God, I have three children that I love so much, and I can't stop using. So I would just feed my addiction more, to numb it, to kill it. And it takes, you know, it takes what it takes. We're all different individuals. And every individual has to reach a point where they say, you know what, I'm done. We're here to help them and anyone, even if they're here court-ordered. It's like there's a saying, fake it till you make it. We always hope that light bulb goes on at some point and they realize, you know, that their minds are clear and they're able to look back at their path of destruction and say, wow, I do need to change my life. It took me 17 years to get that, and it took a lot. And I'm talking a lot of rehabs, a lot of overdoses, which so many of them I never should have lived through. Then I began with suicide attempts because I was so tired of being an addict and thought I would be an addict forever. And I was tired of making my family suffer. So rehabs, jails, suicide attempts. Made it to prison. The judge that sent me to prison, I went to high school with. And he just said one day, he said, Cindy, I'm tired of trying to help you, and you don't want to get help. You don't want the help. So he sent me to prison for the rest of my probation. I was devastated. I had 13 months of probation, and I did 10 months in prison. So in 10 months, my priorities changed. Because back in that day, you could smoke, you could, you know, I needed my cigarettes, I needed my coffee, my candy. So I didn't buy drugs, because you can get drugs. We all know that there's drugs in jail and in prison and anywhere we put you. And that's why judge is so against it. I mean, her last thing is to send him to jail. But I made a choice in prison of what I really needed more. And apparently I needed they had already taken my freedom. So I needed my commissary more than I needed the drugs. I would have loved to have both, but I couldn't. So 10 months in prison, I never touched drugs. And I was so sure that in 10 months that I was clean, I would never go out and use again. And it is crazy how our mind works. And as soon as they open that gate, and I walked out that door, it did not take me 2 days to be back in my Connect's house and back to the rat race.
And Cindy, now you're a licensed alcohol and drug addiction counselor there at the tribal court. And why is it important that you have that, like, share that experience with clients who come in now? I mean, how does it help that you're able to relate and say, yeah, I know exactly what you've been through?
It is so important. And in my field, it is, how do they put it? It is not, what's that word at the tip of my tongue? It's they don't want us to share, to disclose our addiction unless it is necessary. And I'm like, are you guys kidding? Yeah, the licenses I have hanging on my wall don't mean a damn thing to an addict who's sitting on the other side of my desk unless they know that when I say I know what you're talking about, that they know I really do know what they're talking about. That's the credibility I have with them. That's the connection I can make with them, because they really are talking to someone who really does know what they've been through.
All right, Cindy, I got to pause you. We do need to go to a break and hear some announcements. The number to call this morning is 277-5866. We'd love to hear from you. If you've had a substance use disorder, what kinds of interactions have you had with law enforcement or the criminal justice system? How could those interactions be more helpful or more supportive to your recovery? Call 277-5866 or tweet the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. Back in a minute.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Representing Native American tribes, people facing criminal charges, civil rights plaintiffs, and victims of sexual abuse. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Support comes from Music and Corrales, presenting lutenist Ron McFarlane on Saturday evening, September 14th at 7:30 p.m. in the historic Old San Isidro Church in Corrales. Details at musicandcorrales.org.
Some tribes are educating the public to improve the health of their members. Some tribes are turning to more direct means and are imposing restrictions and taxes on things that are unhealthy. Join us for the next Native America Calling, where we'll talk about some of the ways health officials are helping people to become healthier.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Our focus today, addiction and the criminal justice system. How do you see addiction being criminalized instead of being treated as a health issue? If you've been in recovery, what is it like to try to stop using drugs or alcohol? And how could law enforcement in your community be more supportive? Call in now, 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866. We're also on Twitter. You can follow along there with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. I want to welcome another guest in the studio this morning, Pat Romero from South Valley Albuquerque here. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Would you tell us a bit about what has been most helpful in your recovery?
Well, there's been a lot of different things that have come in play, but, you know, a lot of times it's like a window of opportunity. And until, you know, every 5 to 7 years, you know, something's fallen in like in a perfect position to where there's a window of opportunity and an addict has a chance to jump through it. And if, you know, if you don't jump through it, you're going to have to wait another 5-7 years before things fall in place at just the right time. And I've jumped through it a few times, but I wasn't ready and fell again, relapsed. And come to learn that relapse pretty much is part of recovery, you know, and it's something you, if you keep on working at it, you'll eventually get it. And you have to keep on trying. You can never give up.
And you referred to, when we were speaking before, you referred to the criminal justice system as it relates to people dealing with addiction as being kind of like a revolving door.
Right.
And what has that looked like? I mean, what have you seen in your community, whether it's yourself or family members or other loved ones?
Well, with the way they have the system set up now, I mean, it's always been, they call it the revolving door. You're in, you're out, and after a while you stack up a bunch of charges, and after you've been... you stack up a bunch of charges, then you finally see the judge, you're looking at 40 years. And they're wanting to put a big old tail on you and put you a little time in prison. And they're doing that with the younger kids now. So you're actually spending a lifetime in prison now, you know, with a big tail, 10-year tail, you know, after picking up some little charges. When you could have been, you know, getting some help that you need. But instead of being put in prison, get some hospitals, you know. People want recovery out there. They want to do things, but they don't have the knowledge to. They don't have the education. If we were to teach the kids some work, good work ethics, some skills, whether it's carpentry, mechanic, anything. If they were to get some good skills, they'd be able to get a good job and afford to pay for their own house instead of trying to hustle on the streets, trying to pay for a room for the night.
And that's such a good point. Like once you, you know, maybe detox, maybe get treatment, start getting stuff back on track. It's like, what do you do next? And how do you be productive? Sam Howarth, also in the studio here from Bernalillo County Behavioral Health. Is that part of the LEAD program? I mean, what's offered as far as like job training or next steps?
It's, it can be potentially anything. So when law enforcement makes a diversion and connects the individual to a LEAD case manager, that case manager works with the individual to create a personal plan. And that plan looks at next steps. What is it that that individual needs to be more okay? So it could be housing. It could be getting a driver's license. It could be getting SNAP. It could be getting back enrolled in Medicaid. It could be connecting with a counselor, therapist type, physical health. I mean, the sky's the limit. And everything I just mentioned, we've done. Getting somebody to court on one of those, you know, warrants. So you know that you have a court date on Thursday. I'll pick you up. I'll drive you down to the courthouse. That breaks that cycle, at least temporarily, because if they don't go, there's another warrant. So everything and anything that an individual can do to get them on a path towards being more whole so that then they can look at their addiction issue.
I want to hear also about what's going on in Rio Arriba County. On the line, we have Michelle Pacino, who is directing the Reroute program there. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning.
So y'all have been up and running since February. And you've got about 20 people who have been referred into the program. Can you talk a little bit about the challenges and the opportunities that have come up in planning this program?
I would say the greatest opportunity has been the collaboration that has come from the process, because this is something that has been on the minds of a lot of the leadership in the community. You know, about the criminal justice system just not serving our community and needing to find a different.
And, you know, just kind of fundamentally, law enforcement officers are trained to catch people who break the law and hand them to the courts to be punished as a deterrent to future crimes. And that's kind of what we think of as traditionally police, you know, role. And a program like Reroute is sort of the opposite approach to that tough on crime mindset. I mean, what is it like trying to get buy-in for that shift in approach?
That's what I was kind of saying, is like the leadership and a lot of folks, the sheriff and my director at Health and Human Services have been working on this and talking about this. And a few officers have been informally diverting over the years, because there's a lot of relationships and a lot of desire to help the community members. And then we also have a lot of law enforcement that you're kind of talking about that are more conventionally trained and just haven't been exposed to kind of these new ways of thinking, because this is a national trend, and it's not just happening at the pre-arrest point, but court diversion and alternative sentencing and programs in jails and reentry programs as well.
And there was a 2018 review of the Santa Fe diversion program, LEAD program. A lot of good stuff in there about how participants, you know, had lower recidivism and lower drug use. But there was also a note that there was some concern over the name. Like, there was a perception that this was a program where police would get leads to, you know, who was dealing. And this is, you know, the perception that it was like a snitch program. I mean, have you heard things like that? And how do you try to correct misunderstandings?
We most definitely hear it. And, you know, we we decided to just define ourselves, and you know, we use Reroute as a as our name for our program to just talk about folks, you know, rerouting themselves into the services that they actually need instead of through the criminal system. And I think what we did talk about it a lot. What we came to terms with was that people are going to say what they're going to say, and people have different motivations for different things. But the fact of the matter is, it is not a snitch program. It has nothing to do with confidential informants. It's just simply a warm handoff from law enforcement to a case manager for services. And anybody's welcome to come to sit in on policy meetings, to learn about the policies of the program, or even input community input and so on. So there's a lot of open door, and that's the nature of the program, is to be very collaborative between the district attorney, the public defenders, the judges, law enforcement, and all of our services throughout the community.
I see. Thank you so much, Michelle Pacino. I know you're on your way to work as well. I want to take a call. Mona Cerna, also involved in the Rio Arriba Reroute program. Good morning, Mona.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for calling in. And you are one of those case managers.
Yes, I am. And also in recovery.
Also in recovery. So what has that been like?
It has been an awesome adventure, I got to say. It has been very inspiring, and I love the people I work with, and I am very happy to give back. That was one of my desires of my heart when I started recovery. What was really important in the starting of my recovery was my attitude. Attitude changed, and in a positive way. And I just wanted to give back, and I wanted to help others that were in recovery as well. That was one thing, too. Also, when I started my recovery, I would look for testimonies for others that have been in recovery and that were continuing in their recovery. So that gave me inspiration and hope that if it happened for them, it could happen for me.
And Mona, are you from Española there?
I'm originally from Santa Fe, but I've always found my way back to Española, Chimayo, Velarde. I've always lived there off and on.
And how do you interact with the people that are coming in through the Reroute program? I mean, we heard from Cindy Martinez, who's doing some counseling work in the Pueblo of Pauake, that it's important for people to come in and be honest about what's going on, even if they've had a relapse. What's your philosophy on that kind of thing?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I can definitely identify with her testimony and in her recovery as well, because I was also heroin addict. I in and out of prison, tried many rehabs. Seeing the individuals coming in is a great start, because they are, so a lot of times you think you have to get right and clean and get it down right away. And they sometimes, in the beginning, I used to feel that I needed to do that. And when you have a program like Reroute, where we don't expect perfection, and we know that you're going to struggle, but we're going to be there. It's peer support. I'm in the making of getting my CPSW certification. And so it's being able just to identify with them and know, hey, I've been there. And so when you're able to share that you have been there, it seems like all this weight is kind of comes off a wall. You build a rapport, you build relationship, and it seems to be very inspirational, hopeful, helpful to know that you've got someone on the other side to help you. Does that make sense? I can't answer your question.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that, Mona. And we have another listener on the line from Albuquerque. Cynthia, you are on the program. Good morning.
Morning. I am celebrating 9 months sober. I have grappled with my alcohol addiction since I was in my early 30s, and I am in my mid-50s now, and on the dark side, it included numerous suicide attempts because of just feeling so completely out of control of my alcoholism. And I had the benefit of some security. I own my home, and so when I would hit rock bottom, it wasn't as bad as other people's rock bottom. But in my process, I had two DWIs. The first one, the court system was really fabulous. It actually worked. I had a year and a half of sobriety thanks to the way that the court system in Albuquerque was set up. But when I was back to my own, left to my own devices, I did not have enough of a support system to where I didn't relapse. I did relapse numerous times, and it was a spiral into total despair. And what I find really, really helped me was being quite forthright with people that I was grappling with my alcoholism, and usually others that had similar stories or loved people that were going through the same things would give me little clues. And I ultimately credit finding an AA group that I bonded with as being extremely helpful. And there were numerous groups that I went to where I felt the energy was really wrong for me. Some groups even seemed punitive, and it seemed to me like they didn't even want new members because they had dynamics that were so, almost abusive, almost emotionally abusive. So I think it's very important to shop around for whatever help you can get. And the beauty of the AA system for me, too, was the diversity of people that were there, both economically and racially, gender, LGBT, et cetera, those issues are not front and center when you find an AA group that you click with.
Cynthia, thank you so much for calling in and sharing. I know it's not easy to call and share about that, so I really appreciate it. If you've been in recovery, if you're listening, if you've had a substance use disorder, what worked in your recovery? What helped support you through that? What kinds of interactions have you had with the criminal justice system, and have they been helpful or hurtful? Give us a call this morning, 277-5866. You can also email letstalk@kunm.org. Pat Romero in the studio here. You're also in recovery. Was there anything that you've been hearing from our callers this morning that resonates with your experience or that is very different from your experience?
Well, pretty much it's all the same. I've heard so many stories, and I'm a man with a past from all different angles. You know, I've achieved a lot of great things, and I've been to a lot of dark sides, you know, and I have a lot to bring to the table through all that. And myself, it's like, if you're able to utilize the resources already out there and so you get better and target the needs of the individual, they have a better chance to recover. And as one of your callers was saying, one of the other ones was saying, an addict's only going to trust an addict. You know, they're not going to trust someone that's learned from the books. You know, it's just not going to work. You need that bond, that trust. And that way they can break down the walls and they're able to talk to you a little bit more because they know you've been there. And it helps. It really, really does.
That peer support seems really valuable.
It is.
We do need to go to a quick break. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. The number to call this morning, 277-5866, if you'd like to add to the conversation. This is KUNM. We'll be back in a minute.
Next time on Living on Earth, presidential hopeful Andrew Yang on making capitalism work better for people and the planet.
We should be asking ourselves, how is this economy designed to optimize our well-being? And that includes sustainability and a climate that is healthy and strong for us and our kids.
I'm Bobby Bascom. Andrew Yang on the climate. That's next time on Living on Earth from PRI.
Wednesday mornings at 8 on KUNM.
Is the New Mexico heat too much for that old engine? If your old car or truck just can't take it anymore, if it keeps letting you down, now's the time to let it go and turn it into great radio. KUNM's vehicle donation program turns old cars and trucks into a membership plus a tax deduction for you. And it's an easy way to help keep great programming on KUNM. Condition doesn't matter as long as it has an engine. It just takes one phone call to 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm your host, Hannah Colton. This morning, we're talking about recovery from substance use disorder and how diversion programs like LEAD can help keep folks out of jail and get them into supportive services. If you or a family member or friend has struggled with addiction, what resources or services have been most helpful to you? What parts of the criminal justice system, the courts, police, either help or hurt that path to recovery? Join the conversation by calling 1-877-899-5866. And in the studio, I have Sam Howarth from the Bernalillo County LEAD program and Pat Romero from South Valley, Albuquerque. And a big part of these diversion programs, I mean, the essential part is the law enforcement interaction with folks. So, Pat, can you talk about what do you see as far as when police are stopping people who are, you know, committing drug-related offenses? What are those interactions like, and how could they be more helpful?
Well, I remember one of the times I was out and about, I had gotten pulled over, and the officer, you know, was, I had given a different name. It just so happened that name had a warrant, and he says, get out of your vehicle. I tell him, well, officer, I have the right to know why I was stopped. He says, get out of your vehicle, and I repeated that. And he said, get out of your, you know, your vehicle, you're under arrest, or you have a warrant. And I put in drive, and I took off, trying to get away. Of course, I'm not trying to go to jail, you know. He jumps in my window, grabs the steering wheel, and tries to put it in park. Well, I'm trying to put in drive, he's trying to put it in park, we're fighting for the steering wheel. And he fell out the door. We're going 5 miles an hour, maybe, if that. He falls out the window, I mean the door, whatever, however you want to say it. And anyway, I ended up getting away. Well, I picked up charges for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon on a police officer. I mean, how can that be? How can that be? I picked up charges for that. I went to prison for that. You know, that's not right. There should be other ways the law enforcement can do things. You know, of course, yeah. I mean, if someone's going to get away, they're going to get away. All right? It should have been differently. It should have been different. I would think so.
Do you think police in your community, do you think they approach, how do you think they approach people who seem to be, like, using drugs?
Well, it's all with the, I mean, it's all the way, like I said, the way the approach. The way the police officers are trained, and I get it, you know. The police officers are trained when they go to training. I know when I went to basic training in the military, it reprograms your mind to come out in a certain way. And when the police officers, anybody in the police force are trained, well, they're trained that the way I look at it, the way everybody, all the addicts look at it, is everybody that's an addict that does drugs, commits crimes, they're all pieces of shit. They all should be locked up forever. You should throw away the key. I'm sorry about that. I should have said that. But, I mean, that's the way we look at it. And that's the way everybody
so
knows.
There's this perception that, you know, people are just low lives or yes. They're, you know, not trying.
Right, right. And yeah, we are. We ain't no different than anybody else. You know, here I am, a 3-time former world kickboxing champion. I've been all over the world. And yeah, I made some mistakes. You know, we're all the same.
And Sam, can you talk about the training that police get through this LEAD program? I mean, what are the efforts to sort of get law enforcement to understand addiction differently?
Well, in Bernalillo County's case, we went up to Espanola. Shelley Moeller, who runs the Santa Fe LEAD program, brought in the retired chief of police from Albany, New York. Albany has a LEAD program. And so he did a train the trainer for Rio Arriba, Espanola, us, and I think Doña Ana was there. So Sheriff's Office and APD were both there. We were there. And then each entity, APD and SO, developed their own trainings. And they're pretty similar. We attended those trainings as well, and we're available to be helpful and answer questions if need be. Just so you know, APD has trained about 8 officers in the Southeast Heights Area Command, their problem response team, and SO has trained about 35 officers. I know SO is intending to train their entire force. APD is looking at the Southeast project as a pilot, and then depending on, we're going to relook at it in about 2.5 months, total of 3 months, and see if we want to expand it around Albuquerque.
I see. And Pat, what do you think, what changes do law enforcement need to make in the way, in their attitude towards people who have substance use disorder? I mean, how could it be different?
Well, I mean, that needs to be worked on. You know, we have, I mean, the convicts have their way of looking. They're not going to jail. They're not going to get caught and F the police and all that. So this is being created for a long period of time, and it's not going to change overnight. It's going to take time to gain that trust with each other. And it's going to take time. Nothing's going to happen overnight, unfortunately.
I would offer that the officers that I'm working with, both in APD and SO, really do see this as a public health challenge. And they also, this is important to note, they see this as, like I said, a tool in their tool belt. So it's really at officer discretion whether they make a diversion. So if they interface with somebody who's struggling with an addiction and that somebody looks amenable to help, right, and the police officer feels like this is an appropriate diversion, they'll do it. If that person is behaving in a way that is challenging to the officer, is in their face, et cetera, they're not going to make a diversion. They don't sense amenability and they see aggression. They're just not going to do it. But they do see this as another door that they can action if it makes sense for that individual in this circumstance. The individual looks like he or she is amenable to connecting with a case manager and getting services.
I would say on that, that individual probably needs it more than the other ones, you know, with that attitude, and he's the one that needs it more.
Yep. And there's one other piece that I would offer, because it's not, it is law enforcement in a law enforcement assisted diversion program, but two things. One is those officers can make what's called a social contact referral. So the individual's not even committing a crime, right? So the officer's driving on the street, sees somebody who's struggling. The officer can get out of the cruiser, go up to the individual and have a conversation with them. And if they seem amenable to treatment, they can divert them without them having committed a crime. So that does happen. We have a number of social contact diversions. And there are other models of diversion programs that don't include law enforcement. So there's one that I've been looking at out of LA County. It's called LA Door, which is a team of a physical health clinician, a mental health clinician, a case manager, and a peer from inner city LA. And they go out to different geographies in the county on a regular, predictable schedule, and they just meet with people. So if somebody's is cycling and needs to talk to a therapist, they can go find a park bench and do therapy. If somebody's got, say, a lesion on their leg, the nurse can attend to it. If somebody wants to get enrolled into service, they can connect with the case manager or the peer. And we're in early discussions about trying to expand that so that the contact is just because there's an individual who's struggling and there's a team that's able to provide some assistance. And if that marriage happens, great.
Now mm-hmm. I would say to that, I know a lot of people myself as well. When I was out in the streets, I mean, a person walking around the streets, they got their backpack. That's their whole life they have in their backpack. And that's going to include their drug paraphernalia, everything else. And for an officer to pull over this individual that's just walking, this individual is going to want to run. He don't want to get caught. So it's already creating a problem right there. I would think so. I mean, I'm not going to want to be walking around with some officer going to want to pull me over trying to some kind of intervention. I'm going to get busted. I'm going to jail. It ain't going to happen. You know, I mean, I would think a little bit differently about how they would approach an individual that way. Mm-hmm. You know, it might create some problems. You know, I would think so.
It seems like there's a lot of trust building that needs to happen.
Yes. Now, I would say more if if an addict were to approach an individual, he would be looking more to trust him and listen to him. You know, that's why, to me, it's like real-time recovery is what I would like to work on. And, you know, things that people learn, you know, they do a 10-year study on heroin addicts. What takes 10 years to do a study, a couple of years to put a curriculum together, get it in college, another few years to graduate from that, and then you got to get a job as a counselor. Well, almost 20 years have passed from that old information, but there's new drugs, faster drugs, other things going on, and they got this whole information they learned. What do you have, you know? That's why real-time recovery, you do it now, what's happening now. And the best information you get is from the addicts that were out there, you know, and it works.
We do have a couple of listeners on the line from Albuquerque. Mike, good morning. What would you like to add?
Oh, I would just like to add that I was born in Albuquerque, South Valley. I moved to Alameda when I was 14. Divorced young at 22. Gave up on life for 10 years here. Was blessed to go to Santa Barbara, California to raise my daughter. A preacher gave me a little story. I asked for help. I changed. I became like a pillar of society in Santa Barbara. I'm a master carpenter. I came back after a year of sobriety, and I met Pat Romero at his boxing gym. My daughter was in it. She got pregnant, so he told me to take over. And I didn't know I could exercise so hard. Well, my daughter was in and out of prison for years. I took care of her kids. They're in prison. And in Santa Barbara, I petitioned the city for streetlights. Anyway, this lady got the funding called Grandparents Against Gangs, Drugs, and Violence. I've been back and forth to Albuquerque, and Pat was telling me the other day about stigma. And when I come back to Albuquerque, it seems like nobody forgets how I was 35 years ago here, not caring. I did every drug known to man. I was the only trouble I ever got in was two DWIs. But when I come back, it's like they judge you, and they don't give you a chance. And they don't remember the good you did. So I fall back. I drink something. And my uncle was the director of the Louis Baldonado of the AA. And he said, Mike, you're drinking a beer. Well, when you drink alcohol, if you drink one beer, it like knocks you back to a depression. So what I'm trying to say is in California, I met people that I thought were pillars of society, and they were big cocaine addicts, bankers and stuff, bringing in the drugs. So what I'm trying to say is, why doesn't our state crack down on the big drug dealers and leave these kids alone in the streets? I mean, I lost a step-grandson in a drive-by. I got 8 great-grandchildren with no daddies or mommies around. I've been driving a semi-truck since 2000 when I got hurt in California, couldn't do construction. But all I'm just saying is that we need to crack down on the big drug dealers riding around in this town. And if the police, I have my cousin was a police officer for 35 years, Troy Baldonado with the city police department. If you cannot spot the drug dealers with their big flashy cars and stuff, and you cannot do something about it, we don't have a chance here. That's all I'm saying. So I just want to congratulate Pat for his sobriety. And I wish him, he's like my mentor. And I wish him all the luck in the world. And we need to open up a gym again that he had so we can help the children that don't have no money, that don't have no parents, that they love to box. They love it. They love it. And they love to be out
there. Hey, Mike, exercise. Thank you so much. I want to take one other call. We are coming towards the end of the show here. And Jennifer is on the line from Albuquerque. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning.
What would you like to add to the conversation?
Well, you know, you were talking about incarceration, and I had been using drugs here for many years in Albuquerque, and I left. A friend of mine said he could get me help in Texas, so I went there, and it ended up worse than it was here. He was homeless and on drugs there and was just looking for someone he could take advantage of. We made amends, but when I was out there, I got clean for a short time and had family coming, and I needed food, so I went to a store and wrote a bad check. I did start using again, so that's why we didn't have any money. I wrote a bad check for $68 for food and a bottle of shampoo, and I ended up getting caught at the checkout counter and got 2 felony charges for that. And so I had been halfway through a psychology degree from when I was clean, and I was working with the government with forensic psychology. And when I caught those 2 felonies, that completely ruined my life. I just think that it should be on some kind of a case by case basis. And I do agree with the program that you're starting here, because, you know, they like to say when you go to jail, you've paid your dues, and when you get out, you're coming out clean. And that is not the case at all. I had those two felonies, and because it had to do with money, no one would hire me, including places who say that they hire felons. I could not get a job for years. I filled out application after application after application. Well, you're only on paper. And so what they're seeing is that you're a felon and that you've had charges. And then, of course, I had a couple misdemeanors when I was using it on the streets. I had to make money. So I had one for prostitution, and I had one for intent to possess. I'm not sure what that is. But no one would hire me. And I had a son, and I
Jennifer, was Jennifer, thank you so much. I got to pause you there because we have just a few minutes left. And Sam, some of those offenses that Jennifer was talking about, like the writing a bad check, that is something that could potentially, you know, someone could be diverted in the program that Bernalillo County is working on. Is that right?
I do believe that if somebody had in their past having written a bad check, they'd be eligible, if they committed one of the inclusionary crimes, to be diverted. The exclusionary crimes are violent felonies, promoting prostitution, large-scale drug distribution, sales, crimes against children. If you have one of those in your past within the last 10 years, even if you're committing a low-level drug crime and you would be eligible, you're not eligible. So there are some more serious crimes that would make you ineligible for LEAD.
And we have just a few minutes left, but Pat Romero, you're in recovery. You're trying to be involved and start some groups in the South Valley. How do you like to talk about younger folks about drug and alcohol?
Well, for me, it's just bringing more awareness to the where I live at in the South Valley. We're currently putting together an event. It's going to be October 5th at 1 to 4 at the Westside Community Center. It's going to be an exhibition boxing bout. It's called Fighting the Stigma. And it's just bringing individuals to the area, and we're going to have a few different booths there of the different places of recovery that are around the area. So when the families come see this and they find this information from their... Everybody has a family member that does drugs that's messed up. So they can get some information. Maybe they better help the family members, you know, because you have parents, grandparents, everybody that's involved. Everybody plays a part of this, you know. And it, like I say, it takes a village to raise a child.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for your leadership in that. And we are out of time for today. A big thank you to all of our guests, Pat Romero, Cindy Martinez, Michelle Pacino, Sam Howarth, and Kim McGinnis. And thank you to everyone who called and commented and shared your stories. The conversation does not have to end here. You can comment on our Facebook page, talk to us on Twitter with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM, or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. If you are listening and you could use some resources as to where to go to find support with substance use, we do have a list of resources on our website for the whole state, KUNM.org, for the show page today. Today's show is the third and last in our summer series about addiction and recovery. You can find those previous shows and today's on KUNM.org, or subscribe to our podcast. Search Let's Talk NM in your podcast app. Our engineer this morning is Marino Spencer. Taylor Velasquez screened your calls. Bryce Dix live tweeted today's show. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. And I'm Hannah Colton. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.